Actually, we're going to get right to our first guest today, and that is Jim Cole. Am I saying it right, Cole?
Yes, you are.
Okay, Cole.
Hi, John. Hi.
And Jim is adjunct professor of American and Constitutional History at Hofstra University and also at Nassau Community College. And he's also, which is more, not more significant, very interesting, the founder of ChangeNewYorkState.org. And today what we'd like to do is, I'd like to do specifically, is find out about ChangeNewYorkState.org, and how did you get involved? How did you become an adjunct professor in the first place?
So first off, thank you for having me here at CW Post and at the radio station here. I do lectures here on campus.
So you do?
I'm really, at the Hutton House Lecture Series.
And I will tell you, he has a very large, a very large following in that when he's at Hutton House, he gets a full house. But then he also does lectures right across over here at Hillwood, which is
Hillwood.
Tremendous theater, and he fills that one up as well.
Terrific.
So we have special signs all over the university when he's going to speak. So we have gotten ourselves
got
a celebrity. Oh, I follow him. Oh, I'm one of the fans.
Yes,
I am a groupie.
It's a large group that are interested in these topics, but most importantly for me and most interesting, they're really informed. They ask great questions and make great comments, and when I leave, I'm more knowledgeable. Yeah, I'm really
pumped
about it. My friends don't know that these people exist that want to talk about the Constitution, but they do. And Ann is one of them.
Absolutely. And he's great in that he holds a group together exceedingly well. And no matter where he goes, whether it's here, whether it's a library, whether it's at the JCC, I mean, we can go on and on. He's had a lot of exposure, and we are really blessed today
Terrific.
To have him.
Oh, well, thank you for those very, very kind words. Lyndon Johnson one time heard people saying such nice things about him, and he said, you know, I wish my parents were here to hear that.
Aww.
My father would appreciate it, and my mother would believe it.
Oh, that's cool. So how did you get involved in this?
So I actually got involved in constitutional study, not just of the U.S. Constitution,
right.
but the New York State Constitution, because when I was 24 years old, I took an oath to the U.S. Constitution when I became a police officer in New York City.
Okay.
And I've been doing that for 21 years. I just retired last year from the NYPD as a detective. But after I took an oath to the U.S. Constitution, I said, maybe this is something I should read, considering I just took an oath to it. And when I read it, I got fascinated by the idea that you and I could read clauses of the Constitution. You and I could read the exact same words and walk away with different meaning.
Right, okay.
What is cruel and unusual punishment? What is due process? What is an unreasonable search and seizure? And we could be smart and thoughtful people and still respect the difference of opinion about what those words mean. So I went to grad school to study constitutional history, and that got me really hooked. And then
this
I realized
post-retirement.
Yeah, well, this is
during.
No, this is
okay.
while I was
as you
a
were getting
officer.
Ready. Okay,
yep.
okay.
And then I realized I took an oath to another constitution, and that's the New York State Constitution. So I decided to read that as well, which is a little bit more of an endeavor. The U.S. Constitution currently, even with all the amendments, is just over 8,000 words. The New York State Constitution is over 52,000 words. So it took a little bit longer, but as I went through that, I realized that there were a lot of things in the New York State Constitution, even though I was, you know, involved in politics and government and really interested in it, a lot of things I didn't know about. So I thought if I didn't know about it, there's probably a sizable amount of people in our state that didn't know a lot about the state constitution. So as I looked more and more for you know, people or organizations or groups that were talking about it and teaching about it, there wasn't much there. So I decided to create the organization in 2013, ChangeNYS.org, so that, you know, to kind of get the word out there
right,
about
okay.
the state constitution.
That's amazing.
Well, thank you.
And I honestly, I knew you were coming on, but about 2 weeks ago, my partner at work brought up this whole thing in reference to most countries in the world have their constitutions amended every 20 to 30
sure.
years, and we have in 200 years not an amendment, which
sure.
is causing some of the conflicts we've had over the last couple of years with free speech,
sure.
with gun control, et cetera.
Right.
You know, you were talking muskets versus M14s or whatever
right.
it is.
Well, you know, going to that debate, I mean, a lot of our principles, a lot of our thinking about civil liberties and individual rights that we have do go back to this founding generation and the Bill of Rights. And we are still applying, as you mentioned, you know, these the technology of the 18th century to, you know, issues that we're facing in the 21st century, whether it's muskets related to the Second Amendment or whether the police can search your cell phone related to the Fourth Amendment.
Okay.
So there are these principles that we bring from those words and we carry them forward into the 21st century, still in keeping with the text of the document.
Now, do you believe it should be revisited or it should be we should keep the original?
Well,
I'm not saying change it by any means. I mean, like what you're just saying, due process in reference to going into your cell phone is a lot different.
Well, there are kind of three ways to interpret the Constitution. Okay. One way is through original intent, and that is, well, what were the people at the time that they voted for this? What did they mean? Did they mean muskets? That's one way. Another way is that it's a living document. Well, it means whatever we think it means in our time. The third way, which I kind of subscribe most to, is a textualist approach. Well, what do the words say? Do the words support that kind of interpretation? The Second Amendment does not mention muskets. It mentions arms. The Fourth Amendment does not mention cell phones. It mentions your persons, houses, papers, and effects. So there is enough loose translation in the actual text of the document for it to carry forward into the 21st Amendment and still be in keeping with the words of the Constitution.
Do you think that New York State is responsive to its citizens?
I think it depends. All right, I'm trying to hedge that. No, I actually don't think that the government is. I mean, we need to go right to how elections are conducted in New York State. Just this week on Monday, the leadership of the Democratic Party voted in conference. This is not law. They voted in conference to do away with fusion voting. So the idea that one person could be on multiple spots on a ballot. Lawmakers have been pushing back on that idea. And just the fact that they're pushing back on it, you could see the idea being that they want to give us less choice on the ballot. So if there are 7 or 8 spots on a ballot and it's only occupied by 2 people, it gives the appearance of more democracy, but it's actually less democracy. So there's just one example where the capital of our state is not very responsive to what are the needs of the people. The problem in our elections are not that we have too many choices, it's that we have too few. And our laws should reflect that in our state. And they're not reflecting that. It is very, very hard to run for public office. And I don't mean just hard the decision to run. I mean the obstacles that are put in place by New York State law just to gain access to the ballot. Over the course of the last 2 years, I ran for 2 offices. I ran for Nassau County Legislature in 2017.
What district?
In the 15th district, which covers Levittown and the surrounding area. I live in Seaford. And then I ran for the New York State Assembly last year with the premise of changing some of these laws. And just getting on the ballot is beyond a full-time job because the people that write the laws want to make sure that you're not part of that process. So that's just one way that our state is not very responsive to the people and what we would want, and that's more choice on our ballots.
Okay. let's stick with that for a minute.
Yeah.
More choice on your ballot. So then you take a party, you know, one of the not Republican or Democrat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they put up their own candidate, who could be a tremendous candidate.
Sure.
But probably doesn't have the money, the potential to actually win.
Right.
Why wouldn't you want that person to be endorsed by the party who most represents them, so that you'd say between, you know, if we're talking between Jim and Ann,
sure,
my party is the, you know, ostrich party, and I think you represent me more than Ann.
Sure.
But if they put up another third party who has no shot, mm-hmm. I mean, between petitioning and everything else to get on some of these ballots,
right,
they have no shot, so they could actually have less of a voice.
Sure. Well, that was the original thinking in 1947 when they adopted this law, signed into law by Thomas Dewey, to show how long this has been in place, right, over, 60 years now, 70 years. So one of the things that we see is that was the original idea, the idea that me, let's say, a Republican or a Democratic candidate, and you with the ostrich party that you present, I would maybe adopt some of the things that were important to you and your party members, and now your party platform will be represented in a major party candidate. That was the idea, but that's not what's happening. What's happening is the Working Families Party, let's say, signing on to the Democratic nominee, or the Conservative Party signing on to the Republican nominee. It's not that they're becoming, taking on the policies of the Working Families Party, the Conservative Party. The person who really gets the benefit out of this, for the most part, is not the member of the party who now see their principles reflected in a major party candidate. It's the leaders of the minor parties. So the leaders are the ones, the Ostrich Party, the Working Families Party, the Conservative Party, the Reform Party, the leaders of these parties are getting tremendous benefits in exchange for giving away that endorsement. It's not that they're getting their principles represented. If you look especially on, especially when it comes to local offices, the assembly, where the state senate, where people aren't paying as much attention as governor or attorney general of the state, statewide office, a lot of times they're not taking on the principles of the party. They're just getting their name in another place. And one of the things that reflects is that when you look at your ballot on election day, what is most consequential on that ballot are the parties, not the candidates. So we care more about giving space to the parties than we do about giving space to the candidates. We are one of only four states that do that. What other states do is that, John, if you're running for office, your name is on the ballot, and then maybe in parenthesis next to your name are the nominations that you have from the parties.
Right, okay.
Instead, what we do is we put your name on four different times. So anywhere you go, it appears like more choice, but it's actually less choice. What it should be is if me, you, and Ann want to run for public office, what we do is we achieve whatever hurdle it is to run for office, our name is on the ballot. The problem is that so much of this is affiliated with political parties because they kind of control the ballot, not the candidates.
So then just try to clear up for me, there are petitions that people who are running for an office will put out either at the grocery store or by the train station. They'll get maybe support of the unions or whatever. How does that fall into place here at all?
Well, the
it?
Petition process is another extremely arduous process for getting on the ballot. So if you and I wanted to run as candidates for the New York State Assembly and you wanted to have the designation of your party, you would go and get a certain number of signatures of people that are in that party within the district. But the number is so high, you need 500 signatures, which does not sound like a lot. But I could tell you in the age of Ring doorbell and video doorbells, people do not answer the door when you're standing on their doorstep with a clipboard. It takes hours and hours to just get a handful of signatures. Now, if you're affiliated with a party machine, then you have the ability to have hundreds of people walking around. But if you and your family and decide that you'd be a great candidate for public office, it's very hard to get on the ballot. And that's the experience that I had. I treated it almost like a full-time job this past summer to get on the ballot. And it still took weeks and weeks and weeks going out literally every day to get signatures in order to hit the threshold that I needed to get on the ballot. It is literally designed to keep people off the ballot. And then, by the way, after you collect all those signatures, New York State law allows for lawsuits to be filed against you on, based on every signature that is signed. They allow for challenges to be initiated at the Board of Elections. So even if you get the number of signatures that you need, the process really encourages you to really be challenged in getting on the ballot. It's as if we have this wealth of people running for public office that we need to limit it before you, the voter, even get a choice, when in fact it's quite the obvious. Like I said, we have too few people running for public office. So one thing that ChangeNYS.org is trying to do is trying to push for an easing of ballot access. And we don't hear that much in Albany. They just passed a whole slew of election reforms. Almost none of them had anything to do with you as a candidate running for public office. It was mostly about voting, which are also important, you know, principles to put into our law, easing voting requirements to make.
Yeah, I'm going to have to put you on hold because we have to take a break. But this is wonderful, Jim. You're listening to Senior Talk Radio here on 88.1 FM and WCWP.org. We'll be right back.